Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme. This week's episode, we talk to Joe Donnelly. Joe is a features writer at Games Radar Plus and has written for a number of gaming, sports and entertainment publications, including PC Gamer, Edge, Play and 442. Joe is also a mental health advocate and has written a book about video games, mental health and their complex intersections. He is a regular expert contributor on both subjects for BBC Radio. In this episode, Joe chats about his book Checkpoint, how video games power up our minds, kick ass, and save lives. Joe, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's so nice to see you again. And I know we've talked before, and I'm sure we'll cover some of that ground again. I know last time we spoke to each other, we talked about that game that was the one thing that got you into video games in the first place was Lemmings.
Yeah.
And I was trying to remind Rada what Lemmings was about. It's quite a long time ago that game came out. But I wanted to ask you again, what was it about Lemmings as a game that really started that love of and passion for video games?
I think part of it was to do with it was the first game that I kind of understood. I played Lemmings when it came out in, I want to say, 1990. So I'd have been 4 or 5. And, you know, I was aware of what Mario was, and it was about guiding this little Italian plumber across the screen. But with Lemmings, it was the first game that my dad had got for the Atari ST, which was our kind of family computer. And I didn't know what a lemming was. In fact, I didn't know that the lemmings that are interpreted in the game, you know, with the kind of fluffy green hair and the blue robes, are nothing like the actual real animal. I didn't think they had green hair and wore blue robes, but I thought there might have been some sort of similarity. But no, it was about guiding these little sprites across a screen from A to B and trying to preserve the life of them all as you could and overcoming various puzzles and stuff. But it was just a really simple premise of a game where the stakes were really high and there was a really kind of natural learning curve to it as well. And, you know, at that age, I didn't necessarily know what a learning curve was, but I understood that by progressing through the game, you know, it was rewarding me, which is at the essence of every video game, especially how much they've evolved over the last 30 years or so. But yeah, just ticked all the boxes. And also because I was playing it with my dad, it was a kind of family element to it as well. So yeah, I mean, it stuck with me. Sometimes, not so much these days, but you can still get it. You can get it as a browser game now because technology's moved on so far. But I love jumping back in and just testing myself in some of the harder puzzles. So.
And is it just as good now as you remember it when you were growing up?
I mean, it's so bloody frustrating now if you can't get back to the level. Some of the cuss words that come out of my mouth now, I hope to goodness I wasn't doing that when I was 4 or 5 years old. But no, I think that speaks to a good game that you can still pick it up. I mean, naturally, things like, you know, visual fidelity, graphics and everything about immersiveness of computer games has moved on a lot since. But there are some core elements of the joy that's derived from overcoming puzzles and stuff, which still exists in video games today. And I think, like, the best video games, okay, they might not look as good, but there is a timelessness to them. And I think Lemons kind of falls into that category for me.
And I suppose also, I mean, it's that element of imagination, isn't it? That element of just how we like films and how we like books and how we like kind of going into different worlds. You know, gaming and computer games really are just another world where you can just get away from everything that's going on in your life and just totally immerse yourself in that. And like you said, I mean, you really cared about those lemmings. Like, you did not want them to die. It's like literally that's everything.
I think that, I mean, that's that. I've spoken about this before to you, Giles, and the number of times when I've spoken about video games, but player agency is such an important part of video games. And for me, it's what makes video games unique against more traditional media, like books, like film, like television. And as much as I'm an advocate for video games, I would never say that one is better than the other. There seems to be some weird rivalries among the disciplines. You see that, you know, no matter what your area of interest is, especially in specialist media. But I think with video games, where they're unique is it's the interactivity of it. You put yourself into it. So you could read a book about, you know, figuratively about lemons, and you want the main characters to survive through their trials and tribulations, but it's passive. You know, like, you're reading a book and it's the author that's in charge, and that doesn't take away from reading. I love reading as well, but in games it's you. You know, if you put that control pad down and press play, nothing is going to happen. The narrative isn't going to progress. Those lemons aren't going to save themselves. It needs to be you. And I think one of the simplest ways of putting that is if you are watching a film, for example, you're reading a book and the main character, you know, meets their maker and they're no longer in it. You say that person has died. But if you're playing Mario or Sonic or Lemons, you say that you died. You don't necessarily say that Sonic died or Mario died, because you assume agency. And that's become more sophisticated throughout the course of video games, and some of the games which you can play now are really immersive. But you do put yourself into it. And I think that that's one of the most wonderful things about video games. It can be really superficial in games like Lemons, where it doesn't really matter if the lemons make it from A to B as much as you want all of them to get there.
But video games, Joe, it does.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, yeah, I mean, it would have broken my heart. I mean, it breaks my heart now. It's nearly 36. But I think if you look at video games, like some of the ones which I've spoken about in the past in terms of the relation to mental health, which, you know, we'll speak about over the course of this conversation. But when video games have that power to be immersive, to you mentioned it, rather, about, you know, escapism and taking you to these fantastical worlds, when it's you, I think that video games can provide a kind of unique learning experience as well. Again, not to take away from books or documentary or anything, any way that you consume media, but video games are often still stigmatized as child's play, when in actual fact, I believe that by putting yourself into it, you can get something really unique from the medium that you can't necessarily get from other media as well.
Well, I was talking to Giles about this actually, and saying how there are so many elements of benefit for well-being and gaming. And you often, you know, when people mention gaming or computer games, you often kind of get that same old, I think quite lazy attitude of, oh, gaming, you know, it's just in front of a screen. We need to get people away from screens and blah, blah, blah. But actually, when you think about it, like you just mentioned, it gives people autonomy. It gives people a sense of control, gives people a sense of actually building skills and being motivated and kind of reaching, like, goal setting. And it also gives that amazing chance to connect with other people. And I think during the pandemic, particularly, my nephew, for example, really benefited from the social connection of gaming when we were all really isolated. But also, I think, really benefited as well from having a sense of autonomy. Like, you know, what you did in that game actually impacted the outcome of that game. And I think at a time when we felt quite powerless, that's actually really important, I think, to have that sense of autonomy and that sense of what I do here matters.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that the pandemic has really brought that into focus. Whilst we are returning to normal, we are still in the midst of a pandemic, and the rules are as close to being as they were in, you know, early 2020 now as they were over the course. But yeah, I mean, like, overnight, when we watched the Prime Minister saying that, you know, back in March 2020, when things were basically shutting down overnight, the rules changed in that instant. You know, he spoke on the Sunday evening, and by Monday, you know, the shops were closed, the bars were closed, and there were so many restrictions. In the UK, there were wider restrictions and more severe restrictions in other places in the world, but it was still pretty daunting. Certainly in the UK, we're only allowed to go out for an hour at a time. But video games, especially online video games, the rules remained the same. And I found that myself as somebody that's in their 30s. And granted, I play a lot of video games, but it was these spaces where the rules had remained as they were before and after, and they will continue. But for younger people who, you know, schools were shut, or they had to walk about the corridors wearing masks, or they were being, you know, given homeschooling and stuff like that, they could jump into Fortnite or Minecraft or Sea of Thieves or any of these online video games and still converse with their friends the way they did 6 months prior, the way they would 6 months after. And that sense of being able to escape to these worlds when I live in Glasgow, and as much as I love Glasgow, it's currently snowing at the minute, having been 17 degrees last week. Even in normal circumstances, out with a pandemic, you can't do a lot of exploring, even in April. So these worlds which you're able to go and connect with people, or even the single-player games which offer, you know, lush landscapes or fantastical Tolkien-esque realms that, you know, people who don't play video games might have only discovered in books or in cinema or in television. They exist where you can go exploring yourself. And again, it comes back to that level of autonomy which you speak about. You're able to control your character around these wonderful worlds. And I think that over the course of the pandemic, I know I spoke about this, Giles, when we last spoke, which I think was around about a year ago, right in another, you know, or again in quite a heavy level of restriction in terms of lockdown at the time. But you know, just having the freedom to go and explore, and with people that were with parents who maybe, I use parents as an example because I spoke to a lot of my own friends who have got kids that are a little bit older than my own two, who, you know, they maybe played a little bit of video games when they're younger, maybe they played Lemmings or Sonic or whatever it was, and they've not really played over the last 20, 30 years or whatever. And there's that real level of mysticism about video games that, you know, who were their children mixing with online? And the whole, as you say, screen time, they're spending too much time in front of video games, and they should be out playing and things like that. Now, don't get me wrong, there are you know, people that, unfortunately, there are people that you can't be trusted online, and parents do need to be parents. They do need to regulate screen time and what their children are doing. But over the course of the pandemic, because we were all forced indoors, parents that I spoke to, certainly some people that I know very well, some people that I don't know so well, were taking that time to just spend half an hour with their kids playing Fortnite, spend half an hour on Minecraft, and seeing the benefits of these online worlds, again, at a time when, you know, free exploration wasn't possible in real life, and seeing the benefits of learning, of socialising that video games provided. And I think that some of that mysticism was debunked over the course of the pandemic. So whilst it's a horrible time for the world, you know, and people losing people close to them, and it's a really horrendous time for a lot of people, even for their mental health being locked inside, I think video games were providing an outlet which was making it easier for some people, and again allowing parents or people who weren't that sure of video games to reevaluate things. Even in the last year, I mean, one of my friends was on strike through industrial action at his work, and he rediscovered video games. We were texting a bit, and he was asking me what games were good at the minute, and he hadn't played his PlayStation for 20 years, and he picked it back up at a time when it was a fraught period for him in terms of, you know, wanting to not cross the picket line, but also have sanity in the house, really, and he was able to turn to video games. So I think that video games are always providing that outlet for escapism across a vast variety of circumstances for people.
Yeah, absolutely, and I can attest for being a parent who started joining in with the kids, and I got a Switch probably just before lockdown, and I used it so much, and it was like I say, it's what's nice is you have that parallel play. We do it with our kids with Lego as well. Having that parallel play, being able to join in and do stuff that they're passionate about as well. And finding out what they're passionate. You know, my eldest son is incredibly passionate about video games. It's his thing, you know. Some kids, it's football or, I don't know, or chess or whatever it might be. Probably two bad examples. But his thing is video games, and he loves video games, and he's really passionate about them, you know. And he's playing Farm Simulator at the moment. He absolutely loves Farm Simulator, and he's showing me his farm that he's created, and he's ploughing the fields. It sounds incredibly boring. I can see that you're
It's
fascinating though, but it's and actually how that spills out into his everyday life. This, you know, has a real passion for tractors and like finding out. He's even thinking about going to agricultural college because he's got this new love of this thing through a love of a video game. So it's really fascinating that part of it, that aspect of it. Going back to sort of mental health stuff, when did you first start to realise that video games could have a positive impact on your own mental health?
Yeah, so I suppose it makes sense to kind of give a little background on my path through life and then eventually into my mental health journey. When I left school, which feels like a long, long time ago now, in 2003, when I was 17, I became a plumber and gas fitter for a number of years. And it was during this time that my uncle sadly took his own life. So I was kind of in terms of learning about mental health, whilst even at school and you hear about depression and mental health issues and anxiety, you understand what the words mean, but not necessarily what they mean when they're happening to you. So obviously, you know, my uncle was going through his own mental health battle. He sadly left us in quite dramatic circumstances, and it kind of, the knock-on effect that it had on me, I slipped into a bit of depression and anxiety. And I'd always use video games as escapism, like we said at the top of the conversation. And I found at the time that I was only 22 at the time, so it was difficult to really process what was going on in my head. And I just threw myself into video games. And I've got a real, in terms of my own personal circumstances, I've got a brilliant support network of people who are willing to listen, my girlfriend, my friends, and my family. But I used video games, just single player games, just, you know, zoning out and escaping what was an increasingly complicated reality for me at the time. And video games were just there for me, really. It was just this kind of place that I could escape to and put reality on pause. I then went away to Australia with my girlfriend for a couple of years and felt like I was in a better place. When I returned after 2 years, I realised that I'd kind of put all this mental unprocessed grief and mental feelings on pause. So when I returned to familiar settings, I kind of spiralled again. And it was during this time that I saw a career change in journalism, and I'd always enjoyed playing video games, but also reading about video games in various magazines and online and stuff like that. And it was in this process of writing a bit more about video games that I started to discover a number of indie games that existed in the PC sphere that were tackling themes of mental health head on. They were looking at themes of depression, anxiety, the creators who had OCD, dealing with alcoholism through, you know, how they got over trials and tribulation with an alcoholic parent. And whilst I'd always enjoyed video games and I had a real understanding of video games, I never knew that video games could explore such interpersonal themes and real serious somber themes, to the point where a lot of these games have disclaimers to say that, you know, whilst the creators are by no means mental health professionals, neither am I anytime talking about this, you know, I think it's worth qualifying that I only speak through personal experience, lived experience. They're not necessarily what you'd associate with games. Video games are fun, and these games were exploring themes which, you know, weren't always fun. They were quite serious and quite somber. But by playing these games, like I was saying before, about putting myself into these characters, I was able to really relate to the characters in these games. There's a game called Actual Sunlight by a creator called Will O'Neill. And it's a kind of the antithesis of a video game, you know, unlike Lara Croft or Nathan Drake, who are kind of blockbuster heroes who save the world all the time. You're put into the shoes of a character called Evan Winter, who basically is an everyday guy who really struggles with the monotony of his 9-to-5 grind because he's got depression and anxiety. And the game starts off, you've got all these choices, you can live your life in certain ways and your world forcibly becomes smaller. So somebody invites you out for a drink after work and you really want to go, but the game won't let you because that's supposed to be an interpretation or metaphor for your depression. You know, you'd like to go out and it's the right thing to do, but you can't force yourself over the door. And at the time, that really spoke to me. So I realised that there was real benefit in video games and mental health and the crossover that they have. And as I was writing a lot more about it, I sought to write more and more about video games and mental health. So you had the kind of just games like FIFA, like Farming Simulator, like Football Manager games, which just take you away from reality and allow that escapism, to the other side where video games are speaking to you about really specific topics, really somber, serious topics. And because, again, going back to the agency and the autonomy, putting yourself into it, I was able to take so much from that at that time. I started a column with Vice at the time, writing about video games and mental health. Eventually, they had a little bit of a restructure and there was no more room for the column. And I then decided to write Checkpoint, which is my book about video games and mental health, which kind of charts my journey through depression, anxiety, seeking help, going on a course of medication, which I still take today, breaking down the stigma around video games and mental health and how beneficial they can be to players. It's not for everybody, but I think that, again, against some of the stigma and stereotype of video games, I think that they're so valuable in teaching people about specific things. And whilst those games spoke to me, they're not going to necessarily speak to everybody, but I think if you were to play one and just have your mind opened a little bit, then I think that's job done. So I think they're hugely important in the discussion about mental health generally and how they can really information.
And as you mentioned there, it's not just about kind of what's going on in those games, but it's also the fact that games are being made with mental health in mind. And I think that's a really powerful message, isn't it, for someone who's experiencing depression or anxiety or whatever challenge it might be. The fact that someone's actually now making games to, you know, with mental health in mind, says that person, it's okay, there are other people who feel the same way. And it's that same message, isn't it? You're not alone. This is a game for you. It's a game recognizing that, you know, people have mental health challenges, which I think is really powerful.
Definitely, that's the thing. And it's I think that the discussion, even in the short time that I've been writing about games and mental health and breaking down stigmas, or doing whatever I can to help break down stigmas, I think the conversation is in a good place now compared to 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. I think it's still got a ways to go. But I think given that mental health issues are everybody can suffer their own mental health issues, no matter whether it's just getting the blues through some bad news at work or whatever, or whether it is something a bit more dramatic in your life of losing someone. If it's even affecting you in a real third party sense, I mean, if we go back to just before the pandemic, you know, the horrible story about Caroline Flack, and it was, you know, it's okay to be okay. And then there's the next scandal which happens, and, you know, the celebrity press, and they're being chastised, and you think there's so many inconsistencies in life generally. But I think that video games have that power to take on the discussion, take on the kind of the stigma of it, and really break it down. What I love about video games, in the sense of I spoke about the kind of indie games which are tackling these themes head on, you've got the developers who are making games which are, you know, they're thinking, as you say, they're thinking about the content that they're putting in. There's a developer called Ninja Theory who created a game called Senua's Sacrifice, Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, and it's a game kind of similar vein to a game like God of War, which you may have heard of, was really big on PlayStation just now. I'm sure some people listen will have heard of it if you haven't, but Senua's Sacrifice is sort of similar in its kind of Norse mythology. It's essentially a fighting game where you control this Norse warrior, and it's all kind of surreal and it's all kind of fantastical, and it's a really solid fighting game if you take it at face value. But the protagonist has psychosis. So throughout the game, they're hearing voices in their head, and the developer Ninja Theory liaised with a lot of mental health professionals who specialised in psychosis. And whereas they're very upfront about the fact that psychosis in itself is very idiosyncratic, that it can affect people differently, this was a kind of as generalized as they could go in terms of to try and relate to as many people as possible, which I think is, that's amazing. It's a game which isn't necessarily focused on, you know, psychosis specifically. It just has a protagonist who has psychosis, and in terms of normalizing the your conditions or anything in terms of mental illness, I think that's fantastic. I wrote something for The Guardian a couple of years ago about a group that I found in, I'm a big Grand Theft Auto player, a game which, I mean, it's in the title, it's about virtual crime, it's about nefarious acts primarily. It's very rarely out of the media in terms of all the wrong that it's doing in the world. But I play a lot on PC, and there's a role-playing scene where people use the game in the opposite way it's intended. So you can have a job in the game. When you're driving around, you stop at red lights. You know, you treat the world like the real world. And I discovered this group of role players who used the game as a kind of pseudo mental health group, where they met up kind of sporadically throughout the month, and they just walked about this map, which is Los Santos, it's called in the game, but it's a kind of pseudo interpretation of Los Angeles. And they climbed up the mountains, they went trekking in the hills, and they just shared, like, someone had an alcoholic parent, someone had lost their mother, who'd been knocked down when she had been drunk at the time. And it was just using the kind of randomness of the game and people who they loosely knew, but as strangers, being able to share these really heartfelt stories. They invited me on, and I was able to talk about the situation with my uncle and stuff like that. And this is a game which is rooted in violence, and the developers, you know, really harness that, and that's the whole point of the game. But here was a kind of subculture which existed, or a facet of a subculture, where they're using the game in this really wholesome way. And you find these pockets of communities using bigger, wider games for mental health. So it's not just restricted to these little indie games. You know, you have games which are a lot bigger. Grand Theft Auto, everybody's heard of Grand Theft Auto, whether you like or loathe video games.
Even I have. Even
yeah,
I have.
Exactly.
And I've played it with my nephew and I'm rubbish at it and he just laughs at me, but I've played
I mean, it's obviously super violent, but there are also this like there are also these other like kind of pockets of communities using the game completely different. And I think that's the beauty of video games. It's so varied. And it's, for me, in terms of what I strive to do in terms of writing about games and mental health and how the two cross over, is just shining a light on this stuff. It's, when I told that story to my mum, for example, she knew that I played a lot of Grand Theft Auto. She knew what the game was, but had no idea that these communities existed. And I think that it's important to just shine a light on those communities, because I think they do brilliant stuff. And any way you can try and broaden people's perspective or horizons about video games, I think is a wonderful thing.
I think it's also interesting how you can use gaming almost to kind of help process your mood as well. So, for example, you know, what do you need in that moment? Do you need to go and play football, play tennis to feel like you're achieving something, or to kind of almost feel, be in that kind of physical space of doing a sport, for example, when you're gaming? Or do you need to go and, you know, go into a shop and kind of choose some clothes and dress yourself up? Or, you know, there are lots of different things that my niece and nephews play that I think actually... You can always pick and choose the game according to what you need to express in terms of your emotions or what you need at that time. Maybe you need a bit of calm. Maybe you need a bit of, you know, a bit of something to get something out of your system. I don't know, in terms of playing sports or something. So you can almost pick and choose, a bit like music, you know, according to your mood, what you actually need to help express your emotions.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, again, like it's everything in moderation, or, you know, because video game addiction has become a really big thing since the World Health Organization acknowledged that it's the real deal a couple of years ago, and they wrote in video game addiction into the National Classification of Diseases. I think it came into play in January this year, if I'm not mistaken. And not to diminish that at all, I think that addiction can exist in any form. It doesn't need to be something which is, you know, properly addictive, like alcohol, like drugs. Gambling, for example, can't be consumed as in it can't be eaten, and there's no addictive properties in it, but obviously it can ruin lives. And I think that people can become addicted to video games as well. I would never try and diminish that. But I think that with video games, it can be about balance, like anything, you know, screen time the same. How often are you using Twitter? How often are you using social media? How often do you spend playing video games? You know, are you making sure that you're having an active lifestyle as well, and you're making time for real world football and friends and socializing? Again, it's been more difficult over the last 2 years. But I think, going back to what you're saying about what you feel like doing in video games, if we look at the last 2 years, when the pandemic first kind of really kicked off in the West here in the UK, and lockdowns were really quite severe, I was using Fortnite, I was using FIFA, Call of Duty, any of the kind of social games that I could hook up with my friends and just have some sort of normality for, whatever it was, a couple of hours if I could do it. But as the pandemic wore on, and as lockdowns, you know, as we were spending a lot of time in the house, and I love my girlfriend and my two kids, but there was some times when it got quite heavy. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. You know, like you're living on top of each other, and you're not able to, you're all working from home, and the kids are crawling over everything, and it got a bit mental at times. I found that my behavior in terms of what video games I was seeking out was changing. So suddenly I was going from the social games to like purely single player games. I just wanted a little bit of escape on my own. I wanted to kick back on the couch and play Demon's Souls, or a single player game where it was just me in the game. And yeah, I mean, like, if you look at games like Grand Theft Auto, where you could just be going and trying on some new clothes, and it's games have got a wide variety of subcultures where there are people who play games just to partake in in-game fashion shows, or they want to try, say that there's a new pair of trainers coming out that are from Nike, for example, just in this instance. And if you go into the PC modding side of Grand Theft Auto, they are recreating those exact trainers stitch for stitch in game, and then trying them on in game, because the trainers cost £250, and that's quite a lot of money to spend on trainers. How does it look on my avatar in game? Not sure if I really suit them. Let's try these ones. Do you know, like, so again, that's in a game which is, it's not how it's supposed to be played, but people can play it however they want. And the more kind of somber side of things, Animal Crossing New Horizons, which was a really big one in the Switch, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of, that released just as lockdowns were kicking in the UK. And I think Nintendo saw massive sales in that, which was interesting at a time when industries were starting to shrink. Much more people were turning to video games, which is, I'm not a business expert, but that's quite an interesting quirk in itself. But at a time when funeral services were obviously really restricted, people were using games like Animal Crossing to hold vigils in-game where they could have as many people as they wanted. There was places of memorial in-game, there's a cemetery in-game. And I think that that's fascinating. I think that people were able to use video games. You know, it's not necessarily the most positive side of things, but they were able to grieve in ways that they couldn't in real life because they were able to lean on video games. So again, like books, like film, like TV, there are, you can approach the medium in any way you want, which is, I mean, without sounding, I sound like I'm working PR for video games, but the possibilities are limitless. You know, like, you can do it as however you wish, and that's the way it should be. Like, that's the thing about gaming as well. Like, and this is something I've spoken about a lot, especially in my book, that there is, and you get this level of snobbery in any kind of form of media, but, you know, who's a true gamer, who's a casual gamer compared to a serious gamer, or, yeah, I know that you get people who play esports who are paid to play video games, but otherwise, if you play Farmville on your phone, you know, if you play that on Facebook, or, you know, you're mad into Farming Simulator and you've put 100 hours in it, I don't really see a difference. I don't care, as long as you're comfortable with the label. If you're not, then don't call yourself a gamer. If you are, then do. There shouldn't be, it's a really open and accessible medium, and, you know, there's no shame or stigma attached to it as far as I'm concerned. You should enjoy it however you wish, and yeah, that's what a lot of people do, and it's good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fascinating about the Animal Crossing stuff. Elijah, my eldest, he loves Animal Crossing, and he played that a lot, actually. Like you say, that came out just the right time for a lot of people. And it's such a nice sort of gentle game as well. I think it was perfect for him. And yeah, he had a lot of anxieties at that point as well, because, you know, there's a lot of medical stuff going on in the news, you know, and I think that really helped him, actually, during that time. If there's anyone listening who's got, you know, is going through a difficult time or challenging time, are there any games you would, and obviously they're into gaming, but are there any games that, I know you've mentioned a few, but are there any other games you can sort of suggest would be good ones for someone who's particularly looking for something to play that might help them during a challenging time?
Yeah, again, it depends on exactly what you're looking for. If you're looking for something which is tackling these themes of depression and anxiety and stuff like that head on, I always recommend Actual Sunlight, which is the one I mentioned earlier on in the conversation, which is about depression and anxiety specifically. The same creator, Will O'Neill, has got a follow-up to that called Little Red Lie, which essentially explores similar themes of depression, anxiety, but there's a whole part of the game which explores it through a sister of someone who's got depression, anxiety. And I found that really interesting because as someone who has sought professional help for depression, anxiety disorder, has been diagnosed and who takes medication, I can get quite caught up in how I'm feeling all the time. It can be quite a selfish condition, and this game allowed me to open my eyes to how I might be treating people inadvertently around me. So my girlfriend's an absolute saint through some of the stuff she's been able to support me through, and, you know, I take nothing for granted. But this was a video game to kind of show it from the other side, which I think generally, even in literature or any other kind of form of media, isn't explored as much. We often see it through the lens of the person that's struggling, which is very important, but to see it from the other side, I think, is really important as well. There's a game called Papo and Yo by a developer called Vander Caballero, and that looks at alcoholism. It's a puzzle game about this young boy. The creator's Brazilian, so it kind of unfolds in a Brazilian favela, an impoverished area, and there's this monster, which is supposed to be the metaphor of his father, who was an alcoholic, and he was always trying to save, but I don't think his father really wanted to be saved, and it kind of takes you through that path. And it's a real interesting look at alcoholism, which is, you know, I know affects a lot of people in the UK, especially over the last 2 years when we've been struggling, and you hear about people struggling with alcohol a lot over the last couple of years especially. There's a game called Neverending Nightmares, which is about OCD, and the creator, Matt Gildenback, uses the game to illustrate his OCD, and I found this really interesting because as someone who doesn't suffer from OCD, I think generally in popular culture we have a bit of a tendency, and I've been guilty of myself over the years, to look at OCD in a slightly lazy way. So you maybe see a desk and it's like, oh, I'm OCD, I need to put, you know, everything in a line and stuff like that, whereas Matt's OCD manifests as really quite graphic images of self-harm and really quite dark thought processes. And in the game, he illustrates this in a kind of monochromatic, stylish, sort of cartoon-like way, but it's very serious. And it gave me an insight into OCD because I think it can take people to dark places, and he was able to creatively explore it with it. It's not overbearing, it is a horror game, but it relates to a lot of the kind of stuff we're used to seeing in the horror genre across all different media, and which really opened my eyes to some of the struggles that people with OCD might have. If you're looking for games which are just, sometimes I find if there are games which have me doing too much, those aren't necessarily the best when things are getting a bit heavy for me. So games, there's a game called Abzu, which is basically just about exploring this idyllic underwater world where you don't really do too much in the sense of kind of traditional gaming conventions. You know, you're not trying to fight enemies, you're not trying to overcome some, you know, evil which is taking over the place. You just really exist in the world and go about different little tasks in the game. There's a game called Journey, which is very similar, where you kind of explore this desertscape. And if you play it online, there's little avatars who are other players, and there's no talking in the game. You just like help each other out through the kind of deeds you do in game. There's a kind of genre generally called walking simulators, which is kind of, that is essentially these games where you don't really do too much. You just follow a story. So it's like kind of halfway house between games and books. There's like kind of heavy narrative elements where, you know, you're not really doing any of the kind of, you know, fighting baddies and stuff. You're just going through the world itself. Gone Home is a really, it's been out for about 10, 11 years now. It's a real, really nice coming of age tale about this young American girl who's kind of grown into herself as she grows up, and it kind of takes you through her path. I could talk for hours about the kind of game which I really love. One other game I will mention is a game from a developer, an English developer called The Chinese Rooms. It's everybody's gone to Rapture, and it's about again, it's just about exploring this kind of pastoral English city where it's beautifully animated. It's a few years old now, but you're just kind of wandering about these quite quaint farm towns somewhere in England. There's like the red pillar boxes and the old phone box and things like that, and it's really relatable for anyone who's been to that part of the world where you just uncover this little story which is happening in this really kind of quiet town. And it's the kind of game which allows you just to switch off and relax. So those would be my kind of go-tos. But again, no matter how you consume video games, in the same way how you might consume books or cinema, if for whatever reason you enjoy watching really graphic gangster films when you're feeling a bit pent up, then that's what you do. If it's playing Call of Duty, or if it's playing FIFA with mates, or if it's, you know, snatching half an hour on your own because as much as you love your children, they're driving you absolutely nuts that day. however you find, you know, ways to escape. I think the escapism is the key, and people will find their own way and how they want to kind of interpret and deal with that.
And I was just thinking about during the pandemic, for me, connection I think was really important as well. So with my nieces and nephews, I wasn't able to see them for months and months because they live quite far away. But what was interesting about, I mean, they were actually the ones approaching me saying, hey, Auntie Ra, go on Snapchat, there are these games, let's play them together, and, you know, we can talk while we're playing them. And actually what was really interesting for me was not just the playing of the games and kind of connecting with, you know, with them through that, but it was also just the general chats that we had during the gaming that were nothing to do with the gaming at all, but actually just, I kind of found like when you go for a walk with someone, you tend to kind of, things just come out a lot more than if you're having dinner with them or you're having in a formal situation. And I found just chatting to them during the gaming, just all of these things would just come out that I would never have known about. And I think, you know, mentally, for not just for them, but for me, it was like light relief for me just to chat. And random things came up, just random conversations, nothing particularly heavy or deep, but just that sense of actually, hey, I'm here with you in a space, you know, we're far away, but I can still feel that you're there and we're just having a general chat and it doesn't feel too formal. And a lot of things just came out of that, which really helped me with my mental health during the pandemic, for sure.
I think I've spoken to like a few, I'm by no means a psychologist myself, but people who, you know, of experts who have properly trained in this stuff, and they say that, you mentioned going for walks, like the fact that you're both facing the same way, you're not intimately looking in each other's eyes as you might be over dinner or something, and it's easier to, the walk itself acts as a distraction and allows you to open up certain areas of yourself or a friend or partner, whoever, that you wouldn't necessarily do if it was something a little bit more formalized. And I think video games certainly online video games are sitting alongside provide the same kind of situation. One person I spoke to over the course of writing Checkpoint, this wasn't in the book, it was just a conversation that I'd had over the course, and it was the woman I spoke to's partner, his best friend, sadly was diagnosed and sadly passed away with terminal cancer. But in the kind of last stretch, they used to play Call of Duty, I think it was, or FIFA, it was one of the two, all the time. And they continued to do so right up until the friend was no longer able to do so. And she believed that if they had, even if they'd went to the pub or if they'd went for a coffee or whatever, the conversation would always come back to this obviously quite upsetting thing which one of them was going through and that the other one would have to deal with after they sadly passed away. But gaming provided that distraction. They were able to focus on FIFA or Call of Duty, so whatever it was, you know, maybe one of them got a kill or you scored a good goal on FIFA and they could tease each other about it because they were distracted by it. And I think that's the essence of that. Okay, it's different from what you'd explain, being able to sit down with your family members, but it's the same, you know, it's the escapism and the distraction that video games can provide. Again, speaks to uniqueness. And I always say, like, I'm an advocate for video games. I don't think they should ever replace any other medium, but they do have really unique, specific traits that you can't get from other situations quite as well. So you're doing this thing, you could be sitting, you could be playing with someone in Australia, you know, 10,500 miles away, whatever it is, and the video game acts as a distraction, but like these people in Grand Theft Auto could be discussing really deep mental health subjects or feelings that they have that they couldn't necessarily take to the family. In an ideal world, we could all talk about mental health. And I've certainly mentioned this story before. I think I mentioned to you, Giles, when I spoke last time, when I started writing about video games and mental health, I had some friends contact me privately on social media or via text just saying, oh, I read this article that you wrote about X game and the fact that you were struggling with depression. I've actually spoke to a counsellor recently and the doctor's prescribed me and I'm on medication now. And it was just that commonality. It wasn't necessarily anything to do with me, but it was to do with the fact that I'd written this article about video games and mental health, and then they hadn't necessarily made the connection before. And they felt, okay, so there's Joe talking about his mental health, I'll talk about mine. And in an ideal, I mean, these are people that at the time I was playing five-a-side with two or three times a week. I was going to the pub with on a Saturday, we're going to the football on a Saturday afternoon. And I'm under no illusions. I mean, I grew up in the west of Scotland. Guys don't talk enough about their mental health, and that's evident, and sadly, in suicide figures, certainly in Scotland and the west of Scotland. In an ideal world, my friends would be able to come up to me and say, do you know what, Joe, I've not really been feeling that good this week or whatever. If we're not quite there yet, that's fine. It would be great if we could be, but the fact that they're able to reach out privately, the commonality being video games in this instance, I think that's wonderful as well. And yeah, it's just normalizing more of these conversations, you know, trying to remove the stigma from stuff which we've, yeah, it seems bizarre to me that there are still so many stigmas around talking about mental health, but at the same time, I'm pleased that the conversation is starting to evolve. There's a long way to go, but yeah, it's good that it's through the lens of, you know, video games that people are able to open up a bit more.
That's amazing. And I always ask this question, and I think I probably know the answer, but you'll probably give it a much more nuanced answer, which is, obviously this is called Things I Forgot Were Good For Me. So Joe, is that gaming, or is there a little bit of nuance to your answer? It's not just going to be gaming as one word.
Well, I mean, I couldn't say gaming in the sense that I've personally not really forgotten about it. I've made a career out of it now. I think specifically related to gaming and the spirit of the things I've forgotten about is that one thing I think that even people who are huge advocates for video games forget about is that video games are supposed to be fun. Like, that's the essence of video games. It's you know, I do talk a lot about, you know, I spoke about games which aren't fun, so I sound like I'm contradicting myself, but I think that overall video games are supposed to be about enjoyment. It's an entertainment medium, you know. Even it's not always that they're exploring themes which are about, you know, rainbows and flowers and fairies and everything. They can be serious, but I think that there should be an element of fun in it, and it's easy to forget that. And if you're someone who plays video games and, you know, maybe they're just not for you and you feel that you're coming away from a video game and, I don't know, you can't get by a boss and you come away feeling more stressed than you did when you went in and you're feeling worse for it, or you're going into an online space where maybe there's toxicity there and people are making you feel bad, remove yourself from it. You know, it doesn't, you don't need to be persevering with something. And I know that it could be hard for younger people if everybody's playing a certain game and it's just not for you. Video games are fun. So that's the, that would be my, you know, it's easy to forget when we see a lot of negativity, a lot of stigmatization. Video games are supposed to be fun and make you happy. In any entertainment medium, that's worth remembering. So, yeah, that would be my, I don't know if that's nuanced or not, but that would be my takeaway for people that are into video games and why you should continue playing.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Joe. We really appreciate your time today. And it's always fascinating talking to you. And thank you
so much. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, and carry on doing the amazing work of highlighting mental health through gaming, because I think that's something which not many people are doing, but it's really helpful. Yeah, thank you.
So that's the end of another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.